everybody. Welcome to a special edition of Geek Tyrant Podcast. This is our review of J.J. Abrams' film Super 8, which we just had the opportunity to see recently. And we just thought we'd just go right into it and just do a nice little in-depth review of the film for anyone that is interested in seeing it. There are spoilers, but we don't get into them till the end. You'll hear us say spoilers before we get into them, so you can stop listening at that point if you want to. But the movie is highly recommended. So let's get right into the review. So Ben Mazur and I had the opportunity recently to go catch a screen of Super 8 on digital IMAX this past week. And I don't know about the rest of you guys. I've been excited for it. I've watched all the clips for it. I know Ben has just completely blocked everything out of his sight from this movie.
Yes.
Am I okay? Doggone it.
That's all right.
You can say my real name. I don't mind anymore.
Okay.
At least at this point. It's not like it's not on the roster.
That's true.
It's true. Mazur, what did you do that same thing as well? Did you block everything out?
I did a media blackout on Super 8. I mean, there was a few things that I had to look at. Just sometimes if I had to correct a post, or if the one time we did Super 8 in the future, I had to go look for like images, and there was really nothing at the time. So, but yeah, I've been avoiding everything. Been avoiding commercials on TV, and which is actually kind of hard.
This was my number one most anticipated movie of the summer. This is the one I was most excited about. More excited than Thor, more excited than Captain America, Cowboys and Aliens, Harry Potter. I mean, this was at the top of my list.
Well, did it meet those expectations, Mason?
It did. It did. The reason why it was at the top of my list, not only because it looked good, but there's a certain mystery behind everything that they're releasing. You didn't, even through all the clips, through all the trailers that they showed, they never really gave anything of the movie away. I still had no idea what I was getting myself into when I saw this movie. Mm-hmm. As for the other films, they're all based on comic books. I kind of already know the story of them. I know where they're going. I know what's going to happen. I know what to expect. I'm excited to see it, but I already kind of know what I'm getting myself into. With this, it was like a blank slate. And so that's why I was probably one of the most anticipated movies for me. But it did. It delivered on every level. I was so happy with the outcome of this movie. It was exciting. It had heart. It had soul. It had action. It had just all that great sci-fi element stuff mixed with drama and intrigue. And it was just so good. And on top of that, it had that vintage 1980s, 70s feel that Spielberg used to, like the old school Spielberg films.
Mm-hmm.
In the review I wrote, I said it's like a sci-fi version of Goonies with some Close Encounters of the Third Kind action going on.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just the perfect mix. And the kids in the movie that they cast were great. They're fun to watch. They all had that quality that Spielberg used to. Spielberg always had this talent for casting kids that could act,
Mm-hmm.
And Abrams was able to bring in this great group of kids that just had the talent and brought it to the big screen. And it was just a fun movie. And I loved it. It's definitely the best movie I've seen this year.
Wow. Cool.
So far. There's still a bunch of movies coming out, but up to this point, up to mid-year, yes, Super 8 is the best movie I've seen.
Nice. Mazur, what'd you think?
I was really looking forward to this film. I wouldn't say, for some reason, like, Captain America is at the top of my anticipated movie list, mostly just because having rewatched The Rocketeer recently,
mm-hmm.
In theaters, made me go, man, okay, I feel like Captain America could be a really great film. For me, this film seemed like, you know, just like after seeing the trailer, the Super Bowl trailer, and just going, okay, you know, media blackout time. I just knew it was just going to be amazing.
Mm-hmm.
I love the whole, you know, the Amblin era of filmmaking from Spielberg, and just the film has this great feeling of wonder. And it just, you know, there's some great moments in this movie where it just kind of reminded me of being a kid. Although
yes.
That doesn't seem too long ago, but it feels like so fresh, those feelings, watching it, you know, played out in someone else.
Yep.
And just that sense of being a kid and not being in control, and somehow that adults are more ridiculous and have less logic than you do as a child. It just, for some reason, that reminded me of youth.
So the older we get, the less logical we get.
Yeah,
that sucks.
Like. But I think just the casting of all the kids in the movie, I really hope they go on to do more stuff, and I mean, this movie in no way has a sequel possible in it, but I just wish that this cast could reunite in some kind of other adventure.
Yeah,
I know. I agree. But I think it's going to be one of those films like The Goonies where we wish that it would have been so cool to see the gang get back together again for another adventure, but it's not going to happen. No matter how much people talk about it, I know we're never going to see a Goonies sequel.
Yeah.
But I think that's what this is going to be. I think, honestly, it's this generation's Goonies movie. I haven't seen a movie that like this that just kind of engulfed.
Yeah. So many movies don't put kids in danger. So
yes.
There's really no stakes. And I tweeted, JJ is Spielberg 2.0. That sounds kind of like, you know, probably late 2000 way of quoting something. But that's really how I feel. I feel like he's really captured a lot of Spielberg's strengths and very few of the weaknesses. So I'm excited to see. I mean, I will watch this at midnight screening, even after seeing it in a press screening. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you hit on some pretty awesome stuff. I mean, both of you, I agree with I think every single thing that you said. And I think the thing about Abrams being Spielberg 2.0 is especially important, considering how much Spielberg himself has switched over to just being this kind of overlord in the film world in the past few years, you know, just being like attaching his name to, you know, in producer roles to Michael Bay's movies and a lot of these other movies that are kind of questionable. You know what I mean? Like, let's face it, Transformers Revenge of the Fallen didn't really benefit that much from having Steven Spielberg's name on it. You know what I'm saying? So
yeah.
I think of all of these movies that Spielberg himself has been involved in over the past few years, the ones that he has not directed, I think Abrams is the closest out of any of those directors to reach what would be, you know, something that Spielberg himself would have done in the early days. And I think that's like something to be marveled at, because Mazur, you're talking about like the sense of, you know, the word nostalgia gets thrown around a lot surrounding this movie because of that whole Amblin thing. You know, it's really cool to see the Amblin logo come up in the early credits of this movie.
How long has it been since we've seen that logo?
I don't know, man.
Honestly, the only time I see it is when I rewatch one of Spielberg's old movies.
Yeah, probably 98.
Yeah, it's got to be something like that. Something late 90s, I'm guessing. But, you know, just like that sense of like, you know, seeing kids like riding around on bikes and not having cell phones, and you know, the movie itself benefits by being a period piece and being set in what, the late 70s, right?
That's
what,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So yeah, like it's such a cool feeling. And Mazer, you're talking about, it reminds you of what it was like when you were a kid. That's because that's what it was like when we were kids. You know, we would jump on bikes and just ride around and like, you know, make stupid movies with our friends and stuff. And
I feel like
we're some of the last people who are really going to be able to appreciate Super 8 on that level, because anybody younger than us isn't necessarily going to have that same relation to that feeling, you know, that the movie does such a good job of like evoking this childhood feeling for those of us who lived through that kind of time. And I don't think kids who are growing up today are going to even have any sort of relation to that kind of stuff, because everybody's always inside and never outside and playing and messing around and shooting movies in the middle of the night in places that they're not supposed to be. And so, you know, like, you know,
I know, but what's cool about this movie is, It will be one of those movies that I think this generation that didn't grow up the way we did, I think this movie has that kind of power to stick with them, though. I do you know what I mean?
I do, yeah.
I think it's one of those films like 10 years down the road.
It transcends memory itself.
Yeah, it will be that movie that The Goonies was to us. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's great shared memory.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. I think there's so much to like about Super 8. You guys mentioned the kids and stuff. All of them are awesome. Like, generally, for me personally, I'm not a fan of kids in movies, and that's because normally they are a hindrance to the protagonist in some way, and just annoying add-ons to their plot devices a lot of time. And I'm speaking in way general terms here, so forgive any exceptions to this, because there are plenty. But I mean, you know, a lot of times they're just plot devices thrown on to weigh down the protagonist, or, you know, have some, like Mazer mentioned, some sort of sense of stakes or something, even though a lot of movies don't really deal with that very well. And this one just kind of bypasses all that by making the kids the main characters, and by having them, you know, be such good actors. You care about what's going on with them.
You do.
Which is kind of a rare thing, I think, for movies starring kids, for me anyway.
They make you believe what is happening is real. Even though we know it's not, they're so into the moment, and you can tell that they're into it, that you are believing what you're seeing on screen, you know?
Now, just a question. Like, they're making a movie. These kids are making a movie in the movie,
mm-hmm.
and they point out certain things about like how they're making it and things like that, and it made me very aware of certain things that Super 8 was doing,
mm-hmm.
and it didn't matter anyway, even though I knew I was being manipulated in some ways.
Yeah. Oh, totally. And that's why I think the movie's kind of awesome, is because it does address those things head on. You know, it's like, it knows that it's kind of meta, and it doesn't care. It just does it anyway, and it does it well.
Yeah.
So, I mean, for that, like, you know, that particular thing brings up something that I wanted to bring up and kind of talk to you guys about, and that the movie Super 8 has such a reverence for making movies and for movies in general, and it has like this real power of performance feeling to it. You know, there's that scene where they're doing the rehearsal right before the big train crash, and that's not a spoiler because you see that in all the trailers and stuff. There's that scene where they're doing the rehearsal, and Elle Fanning's character, like, you know, is just kind of setting up and does this rehearsal, and she just mesmerizes everyone, and everybody just stops what they're doing. And I feel like the movie itself has that same kind of reverence for movies in general. Like, Abrams knows what we are looking for with this movie and the whole nostalgia thing, because he did the same thing growing up and watching Spielberg's movies. Like, he knows what kind of emotions he needs to capture, and does it really well in a way that acknowledges that he's doing it. You know, I don't really know how else better to explain
it. No, that was perfect. That was perfect. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, what did you guys think about the, you know, the level of like any sort of statement that Abrams might have been making about movies in general. Like, did you guys get anything from that, or was that just kind of like an overarching theme maybe?
I was just enjoying the story so much that this first time around, I didn't really dig in to like looking for side things or looking.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got it for the entertainment value.
Hang on one sec. Sorry, my audio cut out.
I didn't hear anything Joey said for a little bit there.
Okay.
Yeah, you said I was just enjoying it the first time around. I didn't really dig into any side things. That was the last thing I heard.
Yeah, I didn't really dig into any. I didn't dig deep into it. I wasn't looking for any kind of statements being made or anything like that. I just kind of watched the movie as entertainment value first time around. That's usually what I do when I'm really looking forward to a movie. I just want to go and not have to think about anything and just enjoy it for what it is.
Yeah.
So I didn't really dig deep. But I know there are underlying meanings there. Mm-hmm. There are things that Abrams did do. But I wasn't really paying attention to it.
Yeah, I feel like it needs another viewing to really dissect it further. It kind of reminds me how, Devin Faraci from Badass Digest came up with this whole theory about how Inception was really a movie about making movies. You guys know, are you familiar with what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
I didn't read that, but I can see.
He kind of came up with this whole thing about how, like, because DiCaprio looks so much like Chris Nolan, and there's like a lot of parallels there between those characters, like his character and Chris Nolan's real life and stuff, that like essentially the character of Dom Cobb is a director in the movie, and like, you know, kind of pulling the blinds over on Cillian Murphy's character, and like creating, you know, Ariadne would be like the production designer, you know, coming up with the sets and stuff, and like drawing all these parallels between the characters and in the movie, and then like actual people who really make movies in real life. And I think there are similar connections to be made with Super 8 in that, you know, not necessarily to that specific degree, but I just mean like more thematic connections of like how important, like the importance of movies, the importance of performance and things like that. You know, it's just kind of what that reminded me of. But
yeah, now I could see that. At the same time, he was really, really just digging deep.
It was super deep. Yeah, but
I honestly, your average moviegoer, 98% are not going to think that.
Oh, sure. Yeah, no. I'm sorry. Wasn't implying that they were. I just mean like in general. For people who are looking for something deeper, there's definitely something deeper to find.
Yeah, there's always something deeper to find if you look hard enough, I guess.
Yeah. So, do you want to get into spoilers? Let's talk a little bit about.
I just have one more weird note.
Okay.
Just right before spoilers, I traveled to Ohio recently, and I've got to say Ohio has not changed very much.
When was the last time you were there, Free?
I was there probably almost a month ago.
Okay.
And like this, the town you see there is pretty much like Shelby, Ohio. So.
All right.
It's interesting because seeing that town and seeing kind of a modern day Ohio, that town is obviously running and it's all full of people and stuff like that. And going to modern day Ohio, like, you know, manufacturing is closed down, so things are closed off and stuff like that. But like the suburban areas and all that kind of stuff,
mm-hmm.
all those houses and stuff look exactly the same.
Nice.
So. There's a real place out there like that.
Yeah, so kudos to the production design crew on Super 8.
For capturing 1970s Ohio.
I think that town, though, that they did film in, I think that was a real place. I think they actually found a small town like that and just shot there. I don't think a lot of sets were built for that.
Okay.
From what I understand, I mean, I remember when they were filming, the set photos were coming out, and people in the area were just taking bootleg pictures of it.
Mm-hmm.
So... Like that whole battle scene at the end, which I want to talk about. Are we getting into spoilers?
Yeah, let's go ahead. If you guys haven't listened to, or if you haven't seen Super 8 yet, then just skip ahead a few minutes. But yeah, if you have seen it, then go ahead and listen on. We're going to start ruining some stuff for you. So go ahead.
Okay. Anyway, that battle scene at the end was freaking awesome with the tanks and everything rolling through the town, the bombs going off, the gunfire, the kids running through all that madness. But yeah, when they were filming that scene, that was an actual like area. I mean, they were, I don't know if the, I'm sure that obviously there were CG elements added to that, but they did bring in tanks and jeeps and all kinds of stuff like that into that area and just had at it.
Cool.
So
let's talk about the train explosion. What did you guys think about that?
It was okay.
It was amazing.
They posted a lot. They posted probably about maybe seven minutes of that scene online. But when you combine all that together, they cut out so much, because when I saw the train explosion, I was just like, oh my gosh, that is so awesome. That is like the best train derailment wreckage I've ever seen in my life.
I think that must be what he was going for. Like, I know I can just like picture Abrams and Spielberg sitting in a room and watching every train crash ever committed to film and being like, okay, we need to one up all of this.
And it looks really great, and it feels like they shot it. It doesn't feel like that CG flycam thing, and it doesn't, especially since so much of it is actually just the kids reacting and stuff like narrowly killing them in every single instance.
Yeah, and that's a really good point that you bring up, because the camera really never leaves the ground in that scene. It's just kind of shows, it doesn't follow little pieces as they're flying through the air. It sits on the ground and runs the length, you know, it does all these dolly and tracking shots and stuff, and then you just have massive pieces of stuff falling from the sky that really have weight to them, and it feels real.
Yeah. That was pretty incredible.
Yeah, really, really awesome stuff.
I love the acting of the. I mean, I don't know how much acting is required, if that was real, but it's not real. So these kids like acting completely freaked out.
Yeah.
Are like, you got Abrams with a megaphone yelling, "Run!" And then they probably have some on-set live explosions, but it's probably nothing compared to
Yeah.
What we see when it's all finished. So
yeah, totally. I thought that was like one of the high points of the movie, just like on a sheer spectacle level, like, wow, that was freaking impressive.
Yeah, if you're expecting this to be a small quaint film, then you are guessing wrong.
Although I will say, I don't know logically if it makes sense that train would derail to that degree if a truck runs into it head on. I feel like it would just destroy the truck and that's about it.
But after watching Unstoppable, I would say probably not.
That's true. Yeah. But yeah, regardless of the logic, it was a really freaking awesome scene. So
it was like it was just rigged to explode, and just like it just needed a little bump.
Yeah, and you know, it gets a little excessive at the point when like it a piece of something falls next to one of the kids and it says like explosives on it, and then like you hear this like high pitched buzzing or something, and then that explodes. It's just like explosion porn almost, but it was great. Let's see, I'm trying to think if there's other things in particular that we wanted to mention. There's one. Well, one thing that I just want to bring up really quickly, I want you guys to see this movie called Attack the Block. Everybody who's listening to this should see this movie, because I guarantee you, if you read a website called Geek Tyrant, you're going to love the movie Attack the Block. So check it out if it comes near you. I think Searchlight or one of the kind of smaller studio distribution arms picked it up for release. It might have been Screen Gems or somebody like that. So it's going to come to theaters at some point if it's not already out in limited release. So definitely, like, keep your eyes out for this movie called Attack the Block, because there's a lot of comparisons that can be made with Super 8, because, you know, kids and aliens and stuff. I don't really want to get too much into it, but I just want to point that out and say that if you liked Super 8, I guarantee you'll like Attack the Block. So
they just announced that it's going to be playing at it's going to be playing at the Los Angeles Film Festival.
Oh, cool. Yeah. So if you're in LA, try to check that out. Okay. I know there's one thing that I want to bring up, and this is what we were talking about outside the theater when we walked out, guys. You know what I'm getting at here?
Yes.
So do you guys have anything else to bring up before we get to that? Because I feel like that's probably a good spot to wrap this up with.
I think the relationship between
Joe and Alice.
Joe and Alice is really awesome.
Mm-hmm.
It just reminds me of that as a kid.
Yeah, totally. And I think, like, the friend thing, you know, like, Joe's relationship with Charles, who, you know, kind of likes the girl, and that's the whole reason that he brought her on to be in the movie and stuff. I feel like that, you know, some people could just look at that cynically, but I felt like it kind of worked in this movie, you know?
It made sense that he would have asked her in the first place. That's the only...
Yeah.
So...
Yeah, because they made such a big deal of it in the very beginning. Joe was like, "You talked to Alice? You talked to Alice?" Like, he said it multiple times, so it really was him kind of being I think they set it up well, basically.
Yes.
I guess really quickly, before we get into that, there were a couple parts of this movie that were, like, didn't really make a ton of sense and were kind of cheesy, I think. Like, especially with the monster being in a workshop down below, like, underground, you know? Like, did you guys find that a little crazy?
I had to do it somewhere.
But, like, he's, like, welding and stuff down there. Like, I'm surprised he didn't have, like, goggles and a blowtorch, you know?
I mean, obviously he's a smart alien.
Yeah.
So I didn't think it was weird or anything. I just kind of bought into the movie and what they were – I was just in the world, so okay. Everything that was thrown at me made sense.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, totally.
It was just while I was watching it, there was nothing that was, you know, that didn't
really work.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and the only other thing that I found kind of cheesy was at the very end when, you know, Joe carries around this necklace as, like, a memory of his mom who died in this accident early on in the movie, and, you know, at the very end, like, all this stuff is getting magnetized towards the water tower to form this big ship that's going to take the alien away. And, like, the necklace is the last thing to go. And he's, like, gripping onto it. And it's just, like, such an on-the-nose thing of, like, let go and, like, accept the fact that your mother is gone. Like, it's just – it's imagery and, like, metaphor on, like, the most basic level. But, again, it's kind of cheesy, but it does actually work in the context of the movie. So – I just wanted to address the fact that we all probably realize that it's a little cheesy, but it was.
But that's what made it. I mean, and I don't know. The other thing, too, that I kind of want to bring up is the emotions in this film. I don't know. Did you guys, like, get emotional while watching the movie? Were there points where you kind of got, like, choked up?
Yeah.
Okay. I'll admit it now that I did, and I just wanted to make
even
sure.
Even though I was like, I'm totally being manipulated right now. You suck, AJ. You're making me emotional, and I'm like, I don't care. It feels good right now just to feel this.
It does, right?
What part in particular are you guys talking about?
Anything related to his mom.
Yeah.
Well, you had anything related to his mom. You also just had. Even that end scene with when they're standing there, the ship is all coming together, and he, after his dad's been imprisoned and is looking for his son, it comes out, they lock eyes.
Yeah.
And they kind of see, you know, and there's that moment there where they're just like, I don't know. There's that moment in the eyes where you're just looking at him and you're getting choked up. You're just like,
yeah.
Oh, man.
He's seeing his son, and he knows he's being seen.
Right? And then with the locket, the sacrifice of his mom's locket.
Yeah.
Is, you know,
I don't
that
think
right?
It's a sacrifice. I think it's like
letting go. Well, it's a sacrifice. You got to sacrifice. Letting go is a sacrifice.
Yeah, that's true.
So it's like when he lets go of that, it's like that was pretty emotional for me. I was like, oh man.
Yeah.
You know, just so the alien could get home, he sacrificed the last piece that he needed
to
blast off into space.
And that's like the peak of Abrams' manipulation right there, is when the little thing opens up and he's staring at the picture in the locket too, and you're just like, oh man, you're twisting that knife, JJ.
Yeah.
But yeah. All right, so let's get to this thing that I kind of picked up on the movie, and you guys didn't so much. We were talking about this a little bit after we walked out of the theater, and I'm of the impression, and I'm willing to be proven wrong, you know, with an interview or something with Abrams about this now, but I'm under the impression that Super 8 is a if not a direct prequel to Cloverfield, then definitely... No, I'm gonna go ahead and say a direct prequel to Cloverfield, and you guys didn't necessarily
not at all
think so.
I mean, the only connection it had with Cloverfield was the fact that the monster had a resemblance to it. The alien had a resemblance,
but it
in no way to me clicked and said this is the Cloverfield alien.
How many arms did the alien have? Because I'm thinking six, but it might have been eight.
I think it was six as well.
I'm looking at the Cloverfield monster, and he's just got four. But it does have that kind of like triangle shaped body.
Yeah,
like he was way beefier looking in Super 8.
Yeah, and the arms with like the kind of all the angular, you know, like the bending and stuff, like that kind of resembled it. I think like definitely. Without a doubt, the creature design is very, very similar. I think that can be, you know, an indisputable fact. But I think there's enough there, and this is just, you know, this is my theory. I'm not sure how this is going to go over, and I know you guys are already kind of disagreeing with it, but I think there's enough there for you to at least make the case that this is an alien from the same planet that the Cloverfield alien is from, because you see at the very end of Cloverfield that the, like in the final shot of the movie, it cuts back after, and spoilers for Cloverfield, I guess we should mention, so just throwing that out there. So the camera, you know, Beth and Rob are down in Central Park underneath that bridge, and it all collapses on them and they presumably die. And then the camera kind of turns off, and then it goes back to the last – it's been taped over their home videos from the time that they went to Coney Island, right? So the very end of that movie, the final shot, shows them looking out at the Ferris wheel or something like that. And in the background, you see this little pod thing come out of the sky and hit the water. You guys know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
So this is presumably, you know, this happened however long, you know, in the past before the events of Cloverfield, right? So
that's why, quote, the footage was important, not because they documented what everyone else was going through, but because they documented when it landed.
Exactly. Yes. So so it's established early, or, you know, not early on, it's established at the very end of that movie that this is actually an alien from another planet, right? And it's not just some sort of Godzilla-created radiation monster or anything like that. So I think with the fact that this movie takes place years before, and the fact that the monster is similar enough in design, because there's that one scene on the bus, right? Like, first of all, the movie does a really good job of hiding the monster for the first half of the movie or something, right? Super 8?
I'd say even more than that.
Maybe even more. So we don't really get a good look at the monster's face until the bus crash scene, when the guy is like shooting it in the face and stuff. And like you see little flashes due to the gunfire, you know, the bullet flashes or whatever. And right in the very, like in those dark moments, you kind of see these little flashes and you're like, I was like, holy crap, is that the Cloverfield monster? Like, is that the actual creature? And then later on, you are just staring the thing right in the face for a long period of time. And there's enough time there for people who remember what the Cloverfield creature looks like to actually draw these comparisons. I think the mouth is similar, the eyes are similar, like just the facial structure and stuff. And I think Abrams did a really good job with it in making it just different enough so we can have this conversation, basically. You know, like just different enough where you guys can be like,
I'm not even sure if Abrams had that intention.
Well, look, the way that I see it is Abrams produced Cloverfield, so he clearly has a really damn good familiarity with what that Cloverfield monster looks like. Sure. So if he was trying to avoid comparisons to that movie, he, as the director, has the final call of what his alien is going to look like. He very well could have made it look way different and then avoided these comparisons altogether. But I think that's a conscious decision on his part to make it look just close enough where it gets people talking about it.
Okay, I'm looking at Cloverfield Monster right now, and it's got four legs, and it looks nothing like what we saw.
I think the face is – I think if anything, it's somewhere – the face is a mix between the Cloverfield Monster and a normal, like, gray alien, because the eyes were much bigger. –
Yeah,
the mouth was jawline was just way smaller. Like, it wasn't like the Cloverfield monster. His mouth was like huge, so he can just like bite into things.
Yeah,
he looked more intelligent.
Sure. I'm not saying that it's the same exact creature. I'm saying there's enough there for me to draw the conclusion of, okay, since at the very end of Super 8, this monster gets in a ship and flies off into space, it's presumably returning to a planet populated with similar looking creatures, and I think it's fair enough for me to just assume that the Cloverfield monster is a creature from that same planet. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. Although, did we treat that alien so badly that you would, you know, ship something over here to destroy us?
Well, here's the thing. If the alien wanted to destroy the Earth, it could have right then and there. It could have. It could have just wreaked havoc and just took everybody out. But it didn't. It went home.
Yeah, I think there's probably more corollaries to, like, District 9 or something in that regard, you know, with, like, it being more concerned with just getting home than anything else. But
yeah.
But yeah, I just wanted to bring that up, you know.
That's fine. It's a good conversation piece.
Yeah, I don't expect to change your mind on it, and I haven't even fully formed my true, like, thesis about it anyway. I'm still in the process of kind of figuring it out and seeing what I actually think, but I just wanted to bring it up. I feel like it's kind of a cool potential crossover or whatever.
Yeah.
But
as usual with these films is, I mean, right now there's very limited stuff you can find, but, you know, once this movie's out in theaters for quite a while, then they'll start, you know, they'll show the creature. They'll show a lot more stuff.
Yeah.
We'll probably be able to get an image to compare the two.
Yeah. I really want to try to set up an interview with J.J. Abrams and ask him about this in person. I don't think he would confirm it, even if it was true in his head. But
knowing Abrams, he'd probably just be like, he'd probably be like, oh, that's a good theory you have there. He probably wouldn't confirm or deny it, but he would tease to the fact that...
Well, exactly. With Cloverfield, they're trying to really create a different kind of creature. So this may have been one of those things where a bunch of things were made and Abrams saw a design that was different or kind of similar. Said, you know what? I really like this. Maybe I'll save this for something else in the future.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think, you know, like, kind of going hand in hand with this theory of, like, maybe it's the same universe or something is just the fact that Abrams loves throwing slusho into every one of his movies. Did you guys pick up on the slusho reference here in Super 8? Did you see it?
No.
There was a, you know about the slusho thing, right?
I don't. Yeah.
You don't know about the slusho?
I don't.
It was all this big marketing campaign.
Yeah, they did a big marketing push for it regarding Cloverfield, and I think it's basically just like a 7-Up, like a Slurpee that you would get at like a 7-Eleven or something, but it's like Abrams' made up brand, and it's just called Slusho. And
okay.
he's kind of inserted it in every one of the properties that he's done. I think even going back to like Felicity, the TV show, because I know it was in Alias, and I know it was in Lost, and
did they do it in Star Trek?
Ooh, man, that would be difficult. I don't know.
Neon sign in the bar, maybe?
That's a really good question. So I'm gonna have to look that up. But basically, it's been in a majority of things, and even in Cloverfield, I think, like, Venkman, correct me if I'm wrong, the character of Rob in that movie was supposed to be going to Japan to work for Slusho. Yes.
You know, I can't correct you if you're wrong, because I haven't watched the movie since I saw it the first time. I'm not a big – I wasn't a big fan of Cloverfield, to be honest with you.
So. I really love that movie, but okay. Yeah, so anyway, it was involved in some capacity. But in Super 8, there was a really brief mention of it – not a mention because it wasn't verbally, but at the Kelvin gas station – when that kid is listening to the music and stuff, and the sheriff gets like his car destroyed and he gets taken by the creature. It shows a couple shots of inside the gas station, and it's like one of the pourable drinks there. Like there's a big sign for Slusho and stuff. And I was like, oh, there it is. There's the Slusho connection. But yeah, my point being, like, if Abrams is willing to kind of set up this, this continuation, you know, of having his little thing be in all of his movies, then maybe it can go one step further and have the same, like, a, you know, the same species or race or something like that of alien be involved in multiple movies. So that's where I was coming from with it. But yeah.
All right. Sounds good. I want to go see it again. So I'm just excited about that.
Yeah, totally.
So we highly, highly, highly recommend you go see this movie. It is seriously one of the best movies that's come out this year. Like I said earlier, it's my favorite movie of the year so far. Definitely check it out. Even if you're a hardcore geek and you like going to sci-fi films and stuff, and maybe you have a girlfriend or wife that doesn't, this movie, they'll like this movie. I think this movie can connect with anybody. Like I said, it's like we talked about earlier. It's a modern day version of Goonies, and who doesn't like Goonies? So, I highly recommend it. But other than that, thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed the review, and we'll talk to you later in the next podcast.